a podcast from the British Postal Museum and Archive.
Thank you very much for coming. I'm delighted to have been invited by the Museum and Archive to talk to you today. And I'm very excited to share with you quite a selection of previously unseen work. As Sally said, I'm a graphic designer and artist from Bournemouth. And day-to-day I work in a creative studio, working on a variety of advertising and branding projects. But in my spare time, I have a somewhat peculiar hobby. I'm a self-confessed post-puzzler. And for many years, I've been challenging the Royal Mail and their sorting offices to work out addresses through the use of cryptic clues and puzzles instead of addresses. The Metro newspaper likened me to the Riddler from Batman, but I think that might be going a bit too far. This presentation is dedicated to the extraordinary efforts and dedication of the British Postal Service and to all others who have quite literally tried to push the envelope. Now, on your chairs, there will be some coded envelopes with little symbols on them. It has a message on there. In order to decode the message, you have to watch the presentation, so you have to pay attention. Also on there are some postcards. Those are pieces of my own work. If they're slightly thicker than normal, then those are original postcards. And I'm more than happy to take you through after the talk about sort of the history of what they are and what they're about. Underneath some of your seats are a special delivery envelope. Now, if you have a special delivery envelope, please do not open it, and please do not tell anyone that you have one. And it will all become clear halfway through the presentation. So, I'm going to start by looking at this. So, when researching for this presentation, I looked at the definition of an envelope, and it just seems a little bit boring, and I actually think that this should have an extra point to it. To me, it's not detailed enough. An envelope is more than just a flat paper container, but a form of expression and a way of talking to your post office. It acts a bit like a vessel to carry your message, but when you address an envelope, that message is extended to so many more people than the intended recipient. A team of collectors, sorters, and deliverers whose duty it is to send each and every letter to the best of their ability. Now, I absolutely love physical post, and I think there's something which cannot be emulated by a cold email or an instant message. When you hold a letter in your hands that's been written by hand, there's almost a certain chemistry, and you know, the indentations of the pen which is written on the paper, and also the texture of it as well. When you receive a handwritten letter, you appreciate it so much more. But I appreciate it even further when you discover the extraordinary efforts that the post office goes to actually deliver it. So I thought I'd start by sharing with you where I grew up and where this all began and where this happened. So I grew up here in a little village called the Lee near Great Missenden in the Chiltern Hills in Buckinghamshire. Now, not a lot happens in the Lee. This is the green. It's very picturesque, it's very beautiful. But I suppose one thing happens, which is that it's the backdrop to Midsummer Murders. And Bring Back Troy, that's what I say. But the if the Lee was a real place, it's actually Badger's Drift, it's called Badger's Drift in Midsummer Murders. If it was real, it would have a higher death rate than New York, which means I'm probably next. And the postman's going to get me. And actually, you can see the post van is actually in the corner here, maybe sort of waiting and to pounce. The other things happened in the Lee, which is that in 1919, we actually had a post office. It's actually this building here on the side. And there was a lady there who ran it called Miss Charlotte Stone. She used to run the post office, and she also was in charge of the telephone switchboard. Now, not many houses had a telephone in those days in 1919, but the manor house, the Lee Manor House, which is behind these trees, did, and it was home to the Stuart Liberty family, which are famous for the Liberty of London department store in Regent Street. She used to listen to everybody's phone calls. She used to know all of the gossip, so what was going on with the servants, what the lady was saying, everything. So there we go, a little postal fact for you for about the Lee. But this is where the journey really begins. This is a very special cottage to me. It's called Park Cottage, and it's where most of my family have grown up. And actually, my grandmother still lives there. It's part of the village. It's a very small little cottage, chocolate box cottage, in the middle of a field. And there's no road. The only way you can get there is by going by foot or by tractor. It's usually surrounded by cows, but obviously it was a bit cold for them when it was taken. It's in all sorts of films. It's been in Monty Python, The Meaning of Life. It's been in pop videos, Oliver Twist, Nicholas Nickleby, Kingsmill bread adverts with Mel and Sue. You name it, they've probably done it. It's still very special in terms of what it means to my family. But my mother told me the following story, which really sparked my interest in the Royal Mail, which was that in 1974, she was a bit down in the dumps, and she's here today, so she's going to hate me telling this story. She'd just broken up with her boyfriend, and she thought she'd write to Radio Caroline to get some male pen friends. Now, does anyone here remember Radio Caroline? A few of you are nodding. Okay, yes, the younger people are sort of going, no, I don't remember it. But it was for those of you who don't know, Radio Caroline was a pirate radio station, I believe based in the North Sea, broadcasting from a ship in the middle of the sea, and it was illegal to listen to it. I really quite like this, found this online. It's illegal to listen to Radio Caroline. Anyway, so she wrote this letter, and pleasingly, the letter was read out on air. And back then, she didn't really sort of think it was necessary to use a postcode or anything like that, but she didn't expect anyone to write back. But some weeks later, she received 21 letters from all around the country, including two from prisoners, one of whom delighted in telling her that he still had his own teeth and was very much eligible. Anyway, she was amazed by the efficiency of the post office, and some of the letters that came back had the most bizarre and strange and incorrect spellings, and these are just a few of the examples. Now, the real address here, it is highlighted in red, so it should be Carol Worsfold, Park Cottage, The Lee, Great Missenden. But instead, she got things like Carol Westgold, Dark Cottage, Inverlee, Missenden. Now, I don't know, I think the post office are almost the Sherlock Holmes of the postal world, because I would never have got that. But over the years, we've had things like House in Field, Buckinghamshire, and they've always got there. So it's just amazing. So when I was growing up, we had a postman called Frank. This is Frank here. Now, this was incredibly difficult to find a picture of Frank, because people don't normally take pictures of their postman. But my village do. This was actually taken in the year 2000, and it was for the Lee Village Millennium Diary. So we had a scrapbook which showcased all aspects of village life in the year 2000. They put it into this massive book, which took ages to bind and all these things. It also catalogues that a second-class stamp in the year 2000 was 19 pence. 19 pence. He used to hate being called Postman Pat, so I don't know why Postman Pat's been put on there. But Frank was brilliant. He did the rounds for about 15 years at that point. He carried on. He's now retired. But he knew the area inside out. And he was quite a character. He wore a ginger wig. He was completely bald, apparently, underneath. And he walked a bit like a clockwork man. He was incredibly efficient. Post was delivered at exactly the same time every day, and he was just absolutely fascinating. And knowing about this and sort of watching him, I decided maybe I should challenge his efficiency and see if he was up for a bit of a postal conundrum, or I don't know, see test him to his limits. So I sat down and thought about this, and what I created was this. A map of the village, but it didn't have a postcode, and it didn't have any sort of anything about, it didn't say the Lee, it didn't say anything about the village, and I just thought I'll put it in the envelope, in the postbox, and see if it does come back. And to my disbelief, it arrived the very next day with a second class stamp. And the only way you could find out where it had to go was this red little sort of pin drop which symbolized the house. And I just thought, I held it in my hands and I thought, wow, if we are blessed with a very special type of postal service here, and if they deliver stuff like this, then what else can they deliver? So that encouraged me to be a little bit braver in the way I sort of addressed envelopes in the future. And moving down to Bournemouth, where I studied at university, I started to create envelopes like this. Now, I don't usually draw myself topless in the sea. There's a long story about this, which I can't go into. But this was a conversation envelope which I created. And the only way it could be sort of solved was by reading the entire conversation. And so there were a few red herrings in there. It was saying it was a conversation between me and my friend Pete. And it says, oh, wait, where are you pointing to? My house. What? Your house in Horsham? No, my house in Bournemouth. Oh, right, cool. Where should we go? Where should we go there? Yeah, all right. And you had to work it out. And you can see the post office have actually had to underline the relevant parts of the address in order for it to be delivered. So that got there. And I thought, wow, okay. They're sort of embracing this challenge. I need to go a bit step further. And I created my own sort of nickname, which was Postcard Jim. And I used to have, I used to send all sorts of postcards and things, some of which you've got today. So, being a little bit braver, I started to become a bit more illustrative. And these aren't necessarily cryptic envelopes. This was sent to a friend of mine called Kate. There's a little note there for the postman that says, I really love the Royal Mail. In fact, I think it rocks. Please deliver this to Kate and through her letterbox. And then there was this slightly blurry looking one was actually a 3D envelope. So you had to put the little red and yellow, red and blue glasses on in order to see the address. I also made a record. I don't know, I still don't understand why I made the record, but it felt like the right thing to do. If you read it, it was something about baking a cake. There was some sort of lyrics about that. And this image in the corner, I used to send drawings of £50 notes to my brother when he was feeling particularly skint at university, just to wind him up a little bit further. So things got a little bit more interesting when I started creating things like this. Now this is a reconstruction of the envelope because I didn't think I'd have to talk about this 8 years later, but I can guarantee it pretty much looks like this. And this is the first time I actually had written to the Royal Mail, sort of almost giving an instruction. And it says, Dear Royal Mail, please choose one of the following people who most deserves this letter. And so I'd written three addresses of friends, and each of them had a little sort of picture about them and a bio, short thing about sort of what colour their hair was, their eyes, what they like to do, what's their hobbies. And I thought, let's just see where this ends up. A few days later, I get a call from my friend Nathan saying, a really strange envelope has arrived. Was this to do with you? And I said, yes, it is. Could you send me a picture of this? And he said, yeah, okay. He scanned it in. It looked like this. To my delight, an entire conversation was happening across this envelope as this was being passed around from sorting office to sorting office, I believe. Or it was maybe someone, it was being passed around a staff room, I'm not sure. But you could see there was things like, rubbish, no, don't like that guy. No, this guy, nah, mate, I liked. The one which was selected had a giant pink crayon heart around his head. And it said, no, this one. Now, I particularly like this because it really shows the human element behind the Royal Mail. People do think of it as a well-oiled machine, and it is, but this almost shows the characters behind the post office and engaging and sort of doing little quirky things, which I quite liked. And I hope they enjoyed it. So I left university and then went to London and came back and moved down to Poole. And this is a picture of Old Poole. This is Customs House, where I used to work next door, and this is where everyone used to go for a drink after work. And this is part, I'm showing you this because it will make sense later. When I moved back to this creative agency, which is called Bright Blue Day, I decided I'll give this another go. This is a few years later, and see if the Poole sorting office are up to my challenge. So the first envelope I sent was this. Now, Can anyone have a guess or have a go at what this says or reads? Shout it out if you can. Okay, right, so we've got Ad E Sun, Bright Blue Day, Key House, The Key, Pool, and then Door Sets. It should have an S on there, but there we go. It got there. It arrived. And my receptionist at work, she was thinking, what are you doing? But she sort of quite enjoyed seeing the postman sort of deliver these envelopes, going, I don't really understand what this is going on about. I don't understand, but this is for you. And then I sort of carried on. So I started to just repeat the address and sort of write it in spirals and just see if that got there. That got there, no problem. I also wrote addresses in Morse code. So this one arrived, and they'd taken the time to write every single letter, and I got a smiley face at the end. And I thought, wow, if they're putting smiley faces, maybe they are enjoying this. I don't know. We'll see what happens. So let's carry on. I also sent these from all around the country, so from Buckinghamshire and Leeds, wherever I was going at the time, would send them back to Paul. And so this one was a coded one where it was all numbers, and I think they sort of went, oh yeah, it must be BH15, that's right there, and it got there. This one was to take the first letter of every word, so Jolly Ant Mouse Echo Sandwich is James, Pizza Office Over Land Easter is Paul. It arrived with this sticker saying it was unable to deliver, but it did get there. They must have had another go and think, no, we'll sit down and work this out. And then I started writing poems. And I particularly like this one. I'm sorry for my dreadful scrawl of handwriting, so I'm going to read it out to you. It reads, Dear people of the Royal Mail, I hope this finds you well. Please could you send this envelope? It really would be swell. It's not too far to travel. In fact, it's just a pool, a place of ships and fish and chips. It's really rather cool. Along the quay to the Key House for James at Bright Blue Day. It's on the second floor, you see, in case you've lost your way. It's very close to Customs House, where a good pint can be had. Why not stop there for a drink, or even take your dad? So thanks a lot, you guys are great. Please have a lovely day. And in case you need the postcode, it's BH151HA. So that got there, no problem at all. Not only two have never made it. One of which was a Google printout, with a little drop pin. And the drop pin was just slightly in the wrong place. And the other one said, James Addison, you know who this is. That never made it either. This one I particularly like. It says, the Royal Mail Homing Pigeon Service. Wouldn't it be lovely if you had a homing pigeon service? There'd be mess everywhere. But it said, this is Perry, he's a pigeon. Please find help him find his way home. And hidden in the scarf of the pigeon is the postcode. So you had to really look quite carefully to see it. Another one was an entire description of Poole Harbour. Poole Harbour is actually the second largest natural harbour in the world, second to Sydney. And you had to read this entire paragraph until you got to the bottom, and it says, however, this letter needs to go to Key House on Paul Key at Bright Blue Day. That got there, again, no problem. I sent crosswords and things like that, and so a common object men always lose, so keys. So that got through there. Lapisine, pool. It seemed to be that they were quite enjoying this, and they got there so quickly. I also wrote sonnets, so shall I compare thee to a bright blue day? This is one. She looks a bit spooky, this girl. I suddenly received an email from a lady in the Netherlands saying, please could you send me a cryptic envelope? And I don't usually do this, but her email was so funny that I thought I'll do it and see if it turns up. And it did. And so you had to follow the line to get the address. And it took a few weeks for her to get back to me, but it did get there. This is my favourite one by far. Yes. This is an envelope of and a drawing of Key House, which is where I used to work. It's sort of hidden in the blinds of on the drawing. It says this floor, so it was on the second floor. And in the parking sort of sign was the postcode. And I quite like the idea that the postman was sort of, you know, gauging whereabouts in the key, because there's several entrances to get there, you know, to work out which place and which door to go through. Now, I must state that I don't send these all the time. I'm not sort of sat at home going, wow, I need to write another riddle for the postman. I used to send these maybe once every 3 months or so, and never at periods of which I would consider maybe busy periods for the Royal Mail. So never at Christmas, when I know they'd have an influx of handwritten envelopes, Mother's Day, Valentine's Day. I used to choose my times quite carefully. But you know, they always got there, and it was quite an interesting sort of project. A friend of mine made a video about this, and it was got picked up online. And I was actually in Lisbon at the time, and I got a call from the Telegraph saying, we'd like to write an article about you. So before I knew it, I was being asked to do sort of radio interviews and all sorts. And then the BBC rang me and said, we'd like to do a feature about you on The One Show. So it took a while to organise, but this is Angelica Bell, one of the presenters from The One Show. And when she first met me, I don't think she was particularly well briefed, because I had to explain what I do. And her first question to me was, why do you do this? Do you live with your parents? And I had to sort of, it took about 10 minutes to sort of explain to her that I wasn't a social recluse sending these puzzles to postmen. But anyway, the BBC arranged for me to actually meet the people who've been sorting and working out these riddles. And this is Neil Phillimore, who works in the pool sorting office. And Neil is a bit of a hero of mine. He used to say, you know, apparently he actually quite enjoyed solving all the puzzles. He does remember a couple of them. I was expecting there to be like a dartboard with my face on it, but that wasn't the case. Interestingly, he referred to the envelopes as jail mail. And I don't know if this is a colloquial term within the Royal Mail, but he says that apparently a lot of prisoners often decorate their envelopes with hearts and kisses, and every single amount of space is written on. And when they come through, they go, oh, it's another piece of jail mail. So, and they're usually quite difficult to decipher. So anyway, I was glad that he enjoyed it. He said it was a little bit of a light relief from sorting posts, which he found a little bit boring at times. He quite enjoyed it. And that man doesn't actually push cages. I don't know, they asked him to push it and put a jacket on. Anyway, the BBC also went one step further and asked the local university, so the Arts University of Bournemouth, the Art Foundation students, to also send some puzzles and challenges for the post office. And so there's quite a few. They sent 16 in total. And I think they went a bit too far, because this lady, she was doing all these types of flaps, and you had to open, they're all illustrated, it was all quite lovely, but it was like, you had to open it in certain order, and they would point to things, and it would go, like, you know, it has to go here, and it has to go there. This one I particularly liked, which was sort of pictograms, so Portuguese wine. These were all sent to the One Show headquarters. So Portuguese wine, port, acre of land, and then place, so Portland Place, and then London, and that got there. And these were read out on the One Show. This didn't get there, I don't think. I didn't see it when they were showing them, but this is actually the longitude and the coordinates of the BBC headquarters, and I think you have to be incredibly patient to work this out. I don't think that really got there, but maybe they had a go, I'm not sure. This was awesome. I'd never have thought of doing this. This was actually a spinning wheel, and as you turned the dial, it would, and if you put it in the right place, then it would say, okay, BBC One Show, Portland Place, London, and tell you the postcode. That got there. And this is Alex Jones. Is it Alex Jones? It is Alex Jones. Holding up the envelope. And of course I sent one, I couldn't resist. And there is Matt Baker holding my envelope. So I was quite pleased about it getting there. And it was all pictograms and things like that. So I don't just do puzzles for envelopes. I've also explored other sort of means of communications and postcards in particular. And in this case, rather than testing the post office, I tested the general public. And I went to a local library and decided to put self-addressed postcards with a stamp and hide them in library books and see if they would ever come back to me. And only a few did, but this one came through. It says, "Dear Postcard Jim, I found your postcard and thought I'd tell you that you are a beautiful wanger." I like the emphasis on the word beautiful here, but after that I decided maybe not, I won't send any more of these. People often ask me, what's the most unusual curious sort of object which has been sent to you in the past? And the answer is this, a condom. Now, not just one condom, actually 300 sent in a giant transparent bag, addressed to me and to my parents' home, and my mum answered the door to the postman. And the postman said nothing, but all of a sudden I got a phone call from my mum saying, "James, I don't know how to say this, but a rather peculiar package has arrived. 300 tropical flavoured condoms have arrived and addressed to you. Do you want to explain this?" I was mortified. I didn't know what to do. And I don't know what the postman thought in the post office, because people do talk in our village. And either we were running a small brothel or I was feeling lucky. I don't know what was going on. But I have to explain. I used to be the president of the Student Stop AIDS Society for Bournemouth University. And it's a charity which campaigns for better HIV treatment in developing countries. And in order to, at Freshers Week, they give out these things with all sorts of leaflets and things like that. So that was part of it. But they just didn't think, why would you send a transparent bag full of these things? Anyway, so from condoms, that leads me on to bananas. This is the only time I've ever sent a piece of fruit in the post. But I looked at the rules and guidance from Royal Mail, and it does say that you have to put foodstuffs in packaging. But I thought, well, a banana sort of is packaging in itself. It holds, you know, a banana. Maybe it'll be robust enough. It does say you have to send them first class, so I put a whole load of first class stamps on the other side. And this is my friend in Southampton. On the other side, I also wrote, "Please do not bend." I just thought I'd chance it and see if it would get to Kate. And it did. It did arrive in a plastic bag, but it did get there. And it was a bit bruised, so I thought, no, I won't send any more of these. But, it got there, so I thought, this is quite interesting. Now, I'm going to stop talking about myself and tell you a little bit about some other artists who have also inspired me. And this is Reginald Bray. He sort of earned the nickname the Human Letter. And this is Bray in 1932 being sort of flanked by two post messengers. And John Tingey, I think his name is, he's also spoken here before and has an amazing book about this man which you have to buy if you're interested in all this stuff. Bray was a fascinating character. He was an accountant living in Forest Hill, Kent, which is now a suburb of London, and he probably sent well over 30,000 letters, postcards and postal curios over his lifetime. And the reason why we know this is because he used to catalogue, and it was very precise, and used to sort of write down every single letter he'd send in sort of like a ledger. So, in 1898, it was quite a pivotal year for Bray, because he must have bought this. Well, not this exactly, this is actually an advertisement for it, but the Post Office Guide. Now, this was published and was a very weighty tome, and I believe that the archives still have one. And it's filled with, it's quite boring apparently, but it's filled with regulations and rules about what you can post and how you should post it and how you should address things. Bray, being the character that he did, went through this very carefully, and to his delight, he discovered that the smallest living creature he could send was a bee, and the largest was an elephant. But he didn't really see these as rules or challenges. So he proceeded to send a whole range of weird and wonderful objects, some of which were onions. And this is him reenacting him posting some onions through his local pillar box, which was actually located just outside his house. He used to attach little labels to them and see if they'd come back to him, which they did. But he didn't just send onions. He sent a whole range of things. So seaweed, a frying pan, shirt cuffs, a turnip, a bowler hat, and even a rabbit skull, all wrapped and all duly delivered. Now, Bray studied the rules very carefully, and one particular paragraph read the following. Living animals can be accepted for express delivery if confined in a suitable receptacle, and special arrangements may be made as to dogs. So guess what? He sent his Irish Terrier Bob through the post on February the 10th, 1900. And this is actually a newspaper article written by Bray with the receipts, so proof that it actually happened, and sort of telling you all about it. And this wasn't enough for Bray, no. Oh no. On February the 8th, 1900, so 2 days before he posted Bob the dog, he decided to post himself. So he sort of tested it out to see what would happen before he could send Bob. And the story goes like this. So he was on his way to visit a friend who lived in Stoke Newington, and it was quite a foggy night, and he got a bit lost. So he walked to the nearest post office and asked if he could be posted to his friend's home. And the staff there were quite bemused by this and offered to direct him. And he said, "No, I want you to deliver me." And they were like, "Really? What do you mean?" He says, "I've read your post office guide, and it says that people or persons can be delivered. So here we go, there's proof. Postmasters may arrange for the conduct of a person to an address by an express messenger." So they went through the guide, and they went, "Oh yes, yeah, you're correct, okay." And they posted him, and sort of led him by lantern light to his friend's home. However, Bray had no proof that this actually happened, so he actually posted himself a total of three times. And here he is, being delivered in 1903, with his bicycle. He was received by his very stern-looking father, Edmund, who doesn't look particularly happy about all this. And this is the receipt, so proof that it actually happened. So it says, "Person cyclist, Devonshire Road, Forest Hill." I absolutely think this is brilliant and so British. But he sent other things as well. This one was a sort of pictogram sort of thing. Can anyone try and work out what this reads? Shout it out if you can. So it says, this is broccoli.
Oh, yes.
Near Lady Well Wood and Lewis Ham, or Lewisham. And that got there, and he did all sorts of crazy things like this. This I particularly like. Bray was a collector of postmarks, and he'd quite often write to different places and ask for them to send it back to him. And these postcards acted as quite the perfect vehicle for him to do this, so he'd collect them and sort of send them off. In the one in the corner here, it says, "To the occupier of the house near Rough Sea, Filey." And then we've got, "To the keeper of Edstone Lighthouse." And then my favourite one over here is, "To the resident nearest this rock." And that's to the old man of Hoy in the Orkney Islands. And they got there, they came back because they've got the postmark. So, hats off to them, they did actually reach there. But I can actually imagine, the poor old postman having to sort of go through blustery winds and things to get to these lighthouses and deliver. But he also went one step further and sent what I'd call a chain postcard. So this was to about four different addresses. So it had to go from, Edstone Lighthouse, first of all, and then it went to Skerryvale Lighthouse, then finally Bell Rock Lighthouse, before returning to Bray in Forest Hill. Now, I couldn't really picture what this looked like, so I've actually tracked this on Google Maps. And you can see here, so it started in London, went all the way down to Plymouth, Then it went all the way up to Skerryvore Lighthouse, which is 12 miles out to sea. And then all across Scotland to Bell Rock, and then finally coming down. And that is, if you drove that, that's 1,500 miles. That postcard must have been probably the longest travelling internal postcard in the country. And would, you know, today it would take 38 hours, but I'm sure much longer back then. So, those of you who have a special delivery envelope, now is your chance to open that envelope, please. And in order to get to the next section of the presentation, you need to solve a clue. So if you do have one, please open it and raise it up and show everyone what you've got. So we've got a T over here, an A, if you could just sort of show it around to everybody. Another T, if you could open that one, sir. Thank you. Another O, so two O's, and a P. So can anyone work out what this reads? I might need someone to be a Carol Vorderman, maybe. You, sir, Ollie, could you collect the letters, please? We can hold them up. So there's six letters in total. Oh, and there's another one here, so I'll come.
Okay, so we'll hold them up here. Okay.
Potato, yes, brilliant, thank you very much. Okay, so yes, it is potato. So I thought I'd talk a little bit more about root vegetables. This was actually sent in 2015, so people are still sending bananas and all sorts through the post. And this was actually sent from Birmingham and over to Derry in Ireland by Dermot Bradley. Or rather, sorry, it was received by Dermot Bradley, and it was from his sister thanking him for organising her wedding, which had a potato theme. Now, all I can say is I'm glad I wasn't invited to that wedding, because that sounds like quite an odd one. But other things like this are coming through, and also in Ireland, this one was sent, which is to your man Henderson, that boy with the glasses, who is doing the PhD up there at Queen's in Belfast. Now, how on earth does that get there? Only in Ireland, but this actually did get received, and it was tracked down to the Irish Times office, and it was received by the wife of the husband it was intended for. But anyway, these things keep on sort of, you know, they never cease to amaze me that the post office can go to these lengths to track down where these need to go. Now, has anyone here ever been to a friend's house and forgotten something? A few of you nodding. My creative director told me about the story yesterday, and I felt I had to put it in. He told me about basically his dad's cousin stayed with him at home one weekend, and she left an item of clothing in the spare room. And she drove back, and she decided, and they rang her up and said, "Oh, you've left something, an item of clothing in the room. We'll send it back to you. We'll post it back to you." And she said, "Oh, thank you very much. I'll pay for the postage when it's come through. Let me know how much it was." And said, "That's absolutely fine. Yeah, okay." So they decided to wash it, and then instead of putting it in an envelope, as people probably would, or sort of jiffy bag, they attached a label to the fabric with a map. And then on the other side of the label were a whole load of stamps for the correct amount of postage, so they did weigh it. Anyway, some days later, a rather sheepish-looking postman knocked on the door and said, I believe these are yours. And he was holding in his hand her lacy black knickers. And she was absolutely mortified, and let's say she wasn't that pleased, but at least the postman's map reading was up to scratch, that's what I can say. Anyway, talking of sort of maps and things like that, I'm quite fascinated with journeys and maps, and I actually at one point designed maps. And this was a project which I did, which was all about journeys. It was called The Disposable Journey. And what I decided to do was look through a phone book and look at different addresses and send to random strangers 10 disposable cameras. with instructions, please could you take some photographs of certain things and then send it back to me through the post, and I'd paid for all the postage and all those things. 10 were sent, and 7 came back to me. And which I didn't think, I was very lucky, I thought one would come back. But anyway, these are some of the photographs which they took. This is the one of the cameras. A lady in the corner, I had to ask them to take a picture of themselves. And there was all sorts of things. And what was really fascinating was I also asked them to sort of tell me where they took the camera on a journey, so I could actually track these on Google Street View and actually see where they were going and going from place to place. Also, I've learned that you can't ask the British public to do too much, and they can't take very good photographs, because I also got this one, which was like a bus seat. But I quite like that, actually. I sort of embraced that people can't take good photographs if you ask them to, and it became more of a theme. However, I also got this, and I think this lady is absolutely fabulous. This is one of the ladies who had run the cameras. I think she's based in Bournemouth. I've never met her, but this actually turned up on the disposable camera, which is rather lovely. And I then decided to make this into a book, so I started to catalogue these and put them all together. Another person who's sort of obsessed with sort of journeys and taking photographs is an artist called Tim Knowles. And he created a series of spy boxes, which were all focused on the Royal Mail. And this particular one was more of a just sort of an art project to see how a parcel is moved to and fro when delivered. So I think it went from one end of the country to the other. And in this Perspex box, it's a piece of paper, and this cylindrical sort of object you can see has a little pen. So as it was being turned about, it was sort of mapping and showing how it was being turned, which is lovely. It sort of created this lovely journey. But he also started to put hidden cameras in his parcels. One of these was confiscated by the Royal Mail, because you're not meant to send sort of live electronics through the post, but after much toing and froing, they managed to come to some sort of agreement and special arrangement that he could send this as an art project. This camera took photographs every 10 seconds, so I think it catalogued about 9,000 images, which he then later used as an exhibition, but also sort of mapped them together and created an animation of all these things. And what I love is actually it's almost the things you never see with the Royal Mail. So there's blurry objects of and sort of faint people. A lot of them were in the darkness, but the ones which sort of had brief moments were lovely. They got a little bit more elaborate as well, so this was actually more of a little bit of film, and he sent these in sort of the early 2000s, but a lovely project nonetheless. One lady in particular who I have to mention is Harriet Russell, and she has an amazing book called Envelopes, The book was bought for me sort of years into my project by my parents for my birthday, and I'd never heard of her before, but I opened it up and I thought, oh my gosh, here is someone who is doing exactly the same as I am. She's writing puzzles for postmen, and they are much more elaborate and far more charming than my ones, and she was much more prolific in her efforts. She sent over 130 different envelopes while she was at university and afterwards. They all look a little bit like this. So this was actually to Glasgow, where she was living at the time, so Montague Street, and this was a crossword which they had to solve. And she used to get little messages as well, which I had, which were saying sort of solved by Glasgow Post Office. She would do dot to dot, and they had to draw and work it out, which is just brilliant. Ishihara, so the colour blindness test. This she must have taken hours drawing this and working this out, but it's so delightful, so lovely. Eye tests. This was to a place in London. Just so brilliant. And this, I don't know, anyone who can read music, I mean, hats off to them. But this was even one step further. So they had to read the notations in order to work out where this had to go. And they always got there. This one, you had to read and sort of work out. She'd highlighted every single letter, and you can see that they've written on the side where it had to go. And she did a whole load of very illustrative envelopes as well. So this was to Newark Street, and it's just so charming. My favourite one, though, is this, which is... I'm going to read it to you. It's not actually a cryptic envelope, but it just says, "Envelope fashion. There are many ways for the modern envelope to keep up with the current trends. Take a look at this exclusive range of patterns available to wear on your inside. It's far more fashionable to go for a blue stamp at the moment. It's what everyone's wearing." And then it says, "As for your address, London dresses are all the rage." And then the address underneath. But she is just absolutely... everything she does is full of charm and so delightful. Now, a man who's really been challenging the postal service is Angus McDonough. And he goes by the title Anarchist Philatelist, which I think is brilliant. He's definitely pushing the envelope. And between the years 2010 and 2013, McDonough sent over 100 letters, it could have been 200 actually, across the UK and worldwide for free by creating his own postage stamps. Apparently it was a reaction to bland stamp design and the demise of the letter, apparently. I have to say I don't condone this in any way because sort of creating these stamps is illegal, but they are pretty amusing because he used his face instead of the Queen. And as a graphic designer, this slightly makes me sort of hurl because I this sort of fluoro... typography, but they're just so lovely, actually. The shave one I particularly like, that's him with a moustache. And these were sent worldwide, Italy, France, and only one was sent back to him. And here's another picture, look at that face, wow. Now, he did send, through his solicitor, a few cheques for about £200 to the Royal Mail for saying it was for unpaid postage, but they were always returned. So, but what he has said is that he'd like to work with the Royal Mail to try and sort of help with this issue if things are being overlooked and sort of help stop stamp forgery. Now, the last person I want to talk to you about today, I promise it's the last person, this is Rita Ikonen, and she has a project called Location, Vocation, Vacation. She studied at the University of Brighton, I believe, and as a holiday project, she had to send the brief was to send an A6-sized postcard to her illustration tutor, Margaret Huber, at the University of Brighton, throughout the holidays. And instead of sending an A6 postcard, she sent this. Well, she sent a whole load of things, but she sent one of these. So this pebble was written on, and she'd sort of covered it in tape, and then put all the correct postages on there. And I think only five never made it, that was due to very poor crocheting, apparently. But she sent so many things in the past, so everything from... fishing wire to her own human hair, which was in, she sent that from, I believe, Hong Kong. So she had a haircut and then encased it in like glue and then sort of sent it in the post. The sole of a boot, an old broken record, some mossy bark. In the corner here are some seeds, which she bought in Chinatown in New York, and then she sort of glued them together, and the lady who sold them to her was very worried that she was going to eat them. She said, no, I'm not going to eat them, Mum cooked, it's fine. A glove as well. But absolutely fascinating, and they all seem to get there. Now, I thought I'd close by another picture of Neil. And I have to say that I've now stopped sending puzzle envelopes. And part of the reason is I felt like the game was up. Sort of being on the television and all sorts of things, it felt like I wasn't like a masked postal puzzler, but it felt like sort of Neil knew about what I was doing. And actually now I get little messages from Neil. If I have, I had an envelope which had the slightly wrong address on it, but he knows now where I live and used to write sort of things from Neil, who has also been on The One Show and all things like that. So it's nice that he's looking out for me and trying to get my post sent to me. The Royal Mail apparently successfully deliver 15 million badly addressed letters each week. and the Returns Letter Centre in Belfast handles a further 72 million undeliverable items a year. And for me, the Royal Mail are the best postal service in the world. Rules are meant to be bent and broken at times, but no other postal service would embrace such eccentricity from so many artists and myself in such a light-hearted way. I think they're intrinsically British and an important part of our nation's heritage, and when you try to push them, they will always deliver. Thank you.
For more information on this podcast, please visit postalheritage.org.uk/podcast.